Tim Sanders is a sought-after speaker and best-selling author of Love is a Killer App and The Likeability Factor. Before his speaking and writing career, Sanders was the chief solutions officer and then later the leadership coach at Yahoo. Today he shares his philosophy that liking people and being liked by them isn't about them, it's about you. In this segment from The Likeability Factor at Work, Sanders explains why being emotionally attractive is important. From earning more money to being more influential, the likability factor can give you the edge. Now, here's Tim Sanders.
I truly believe that every time I come out and talk to folks like yourself, I'm going to take some of your time. I want to make a difference in your life. And I believe this mantra because, in fact, my world was significantly changed about 10 years ago. The tender age of about 35, in a lunch meeting with Stanley Marcus Jr., the late great chairman of Neiman Marcus. At the time, I was a young budding business person at a company that was about to have an initial public offering. I had this wonderful chance to sit down over lunch and compare leadership notes with Mr. Marcus, and I learned something valuable that day. I was talking to him about how, as a business, we had made everything so physically attractive. What a beautiful place to work. We even had a Starbucks-type facility inside the company to serve coffee, lattes, and cappuccinos to the employees. I explained to them that, as a leader, I was trying to make myself both intellectually and financially attractive to do business with, and I was also trying to improve my knowledge, and I thought I had it nailed. And he had this bemused smile on his face towards the end of our lunch, you know, the kind Yoda would have if he were sitting in that chair. And I was getting up to walk away from him, and he says, "Son, hold on a second. Let me give you a good piece of advice." He says, "Above all, don't forget to make yourself emotionally attractive." He says, 5 decades in business, 4 decades parent, I've learned what's important in life is to make yourself emotionally attractive. He said, if you do, very good things are going to happen in your life. Mr. Marcus made a really interesting discovery, which became a few years ago the premise of my life's research. This concept of people making themselves emotionally attractive, the concept of emotional talent, or what I like to call likability. I hope at this point there's got to be some curiosity, though, about this. How do I have a higher likability factor? Am I already born with a high likability factor? And at this point, let me share a point of view before I go into the advice. Here's my point of view about people. And it's not terribly inconsistent with the teachings of a lot of people you might study and respect. Specifically, I call out the great Dr. Abraham Maslow. My point of view is that human beings are compassionate. When a human being comes into this world, she is kind, she is likable, she wants other people in her life to feel good. You know that from raising kids. Kids take feelings really seriously. They haven't learned how to resent other people's feelings. They haven't learned how to finish other people's sentences. They haven't been disappointed and stabbed in the back, so they like everybody, and that's the foundation of a highly likable personality. See, the issue is we've got to reconnect with that 5-year-old inside us, and we have to reestablish those basic building blocks. So the advice I'm about to give you may not be that far from the advice your own parents gave you. You know, be nice, make a difference, listen and learn something, and just be yourself. And after we did all of the research, that's what we found out you can work on. And I want you to think of this in the following metaphor. My son, I mentioned he's 20 years old now. I remember when he was 12, the thing he wanted to be in his life was a rock guitarist. It was like huge to him. I bought him a guitar. I bought him a subscription to Guitar Player magazine. I bought him an amplifier, and after about 9 months, he continued to make noise. I mean, like the dog screaming noise. So eventually, I did what I should have done in the first place. I went out, I got him lessons. On the first day, his teacher, Tad, taught him how to tune his guitar, which changed the quality of our life. I got to tell you that much. But when my son became a musician is when he learned the basic chords that you strike to create music and make a song. So what we've learned in the research is that there are 4 basic questions the average person is going to ask about you, not just on the first impression, which I think is a shallow way to think here. On every impression, it will determine the strength of your relationship and your success. And these 4 questions are usually asked in an exact order. And here they are. The first question a person asks when they come in contact with you is friend or foe. Is daddy in a good mood? Is biological. It is the initial reaction we have. Once we establish that a person's friendly to us, we ask, are they relevant? So what? What have they got to do with me? Once we determine a person is not only a friend and important to us, then we say, doctor, it hurts back here. In other words, they want you to know how they feel. After significance, Dr. Carl Rogers said, is the search in relationships for empathy. And then the last thing they ask, and this is very 21st century, this is very post-Dale Carnegie, is realness. And they ask it every time. People are paranoid and they're getting worse every single day. They want to know that you're real. They want to know that you're really genuine. And they want to know that you are with them. And if they get a negative answer, they go right back to square one. Do not pass go. Do not score high L factor. So let me now walk you through the proactive things you can do to authentically improve your emotional attractiveness and boost what I call talent, emotional talent, friendliness. Now, friendliness is interesting because at a definitional level, it has a range. The basic level of friendliness is the idea of you're welcome, I'm open to you, you know, like a pet-friendly hotel. But the highest level of friendliness, the one that gets reciprocated, is when you successfully communicate to someone else that you like them. And they say, I like you too. At the conscious or subconscious level. So let me give you three pieces of advice on how to be more consistently friendly. I mentioned before consistency in this definition. Some of us are just too good at apologizing for freaking out last week, but I was under so much stress. And we just assumed the other person in our life forgives us. Here's what the researchers say. Believe it or not, you are more likely to forgive my rudeness the first time I meet you. You'll write it off. They say a year into our relationship, it's going to take an apology and three acts of kindness to set the record straight. After 5 years, the apology no longer has credibility, and we're talking FTD, okay? It actually goes worse over time. So it's not just a question of being friendly. It's a question of consistency and not being so dependent on good news and good situations for you to be a nice person. Piece of advice number one, reconnect with your gratitude. One manager in Denver came up to me after my talk and he said, man, I've got relationship issues. He said, my wife's going to leave me. You think it's my fault? I said, probably. At least 50%, right? You co-authored the script. He said, and at work, I'm so upset. They've made changes. The traffic's bad. My salespeople, I don't know what the truth is anymore. He said, I was just muttering. I got the mutters, he said. And I would mutter my way into work. He said, I would just unload and explode at the first person who looked at me sideways. And I've always wondered what that meant. But he said, what I've started to do in the last few months is when I get to work and I'm really upset, I go into a quiet conference room and I shut the door for 5 minutes until I stop shaking. And like Dr. Phil, I had to ask him, how's that working for you? He said it puts off the temper tantrum by exactly 5 minutes. So here's what you do to reconnect with gratitude, which I believe is the antidote to negative behavior. You take a piece of paper out, researchers say, and you write down three things you're grateful for. Three things you're grateful for in your job. Three things you're grateful for in your family. Three things you're grateful for in your community. So when I was at Yahoo, I'd write down one. I love the Yahoo brand. When I walk into the room, the customers go, Yahoo, and it gives me an advantage. Two, I like my boss. She's a mentor. She goes out of her way to teach me something new every month. Three, I love the energy of the salespeople. They will work till midnight to keep a promise. And researchers say when you write those three things down and you put that piece of paper in your pocket later that day or even the next day, you can take that piece of paper out in a fit of rage and your handwriting will confront you because gratitude is the antidote, or in this case, inoculates you against unfriendliness. But let me ask you a question. Have you ever met a truly happy and grateful to be alive person who was mean? Oh, no. So I think gratitude is step one, because you got to change the way you think. Now that you've changed the way you think, and there's a variety of ways you can do this, and now you've got a better outlook, you're grateful, you like other people, do the world a favor. Tell your face. That's right. If you got a song in your heart, do the world a favor. Tell your face. You see, too many of us internalize our positive outlook. People need to read between the lines to know that we're happy on the inside. Unfortunately, they just aren't that patient. Dr. Albert Mehrabian, University of California, studied for decades how people communicate their intentions and their emotions. Basically what he says, there's no such thing as a friendly person. There are people that communicate their friendly intentions on a consistent and easy to understand basis. See, people, they decode the signals that you send to determine whether you're friend or foe. And Dr. Mehrabian's research says that over half of all the decoding is what you see. It's visual. And most of it, the most powerful element of it, is in our face. 38% is tone of voice. It's auditory. And only 7% of it, 7% of it is verbal. But we are so addicted to what did she say? What did I say? Let me read that email over again. It's not that bad, but we don't ask ourselves more critical questions of what was the look on your face when your daughter said she wanted to go to that college? What was the position of your arms when that new employee came in with a new idea? And therein lies growth. Now, some people say to me all the time, they say, Timma, I don't smile much. It's not my nature to smile. Well, piece of advice, learn how to smile back. So smile back. Second piece of advice, try it tomorrow. It gets easier the more you try it. Third and final piece of advice on becoming friendlier, be kind with email. Email is supposed to be a muscle. It's supposed to be a source of power for many people. It is your Achilles heel. No show of hands here, but have you ever sent an email? And the minute you hit send, you had that spider crawling up the back of your neck that said, man, I shouldn't have sent that. Huh? We do it. Email is very damaging because it's so easy, it's so fast, and there's no responsibility. Let me give you a few pieces of advice on how to be kinder with email to other people. Obvious is first, don't send emails when you're mad. Email is for saying yes, answering questions, or asking questions. If you are wondering when you're writing an email and you say, I'm not sure I'm mad, close your eyes, take two fingers, put them against your eyelids. If they feel room temperature, you're probably not mad, but they'll be boiling hot if you are. That's an ironclad test to self-monitor anger. When you have that experience, you take that nasty gram and you put it in the draft or send later folder and you sleep on it. You take my word for it, you will delete it more often than not. Second piece of advice, stamp out reply to all --, it's Neanderthal. Can you say that with me? Reply to all is a terrible email habit. 15 of you get an invitation to a party, and out of laziness, as if you are the smallest cable channel in the world, you hit reply to all and say, sounds good to me, and then you wonder why you aren't invited to the next party. Reply to all is, a real problem for a lot of people, especially in senior positions, because it is perceived as lazy and arrogant. Third and final piece of advice, don't send your employees or the people that work for you, don't send them emails after hours on weekends and especially on holidays, because you'll create a sick culture at your company where people become workaholics. And because you send them an email at 2:30 in the morning on Wednesday, they're going to feel guilty next Tuesday when they clock out at 7 to make it at home in time for dinner with their family and friends. If you have a brilliant idea at a weird time, congratulations. Put it in the send later folder. Now, as we think about these chords, once you conquer friendliness, I think on a scale of 1 to 10, you got a good solid 4 or a 5 working, but that's not going to be enough because the next question somebody's going to ask is, so what? What is your relevance to me in the situation? Researchers say that when we encounter friendly people, the friendliness creates the potential for relationship, the potential for liking, but the potential begins to be realized when we find a connection with that person. Highly likable people build bridges to other people. They develop a sincere interest. Definitions here. Lowest level of relevance is when you and I have something in common. Especially if I'm on the plane with you and I thought you were rude when you got on the plane because you're one of those cell phone people that are stepping over my feet to talk about, you know, American Idol instead of, like, you know, paying attention. I sit next to you, I'm boiling, I'm not that happy. But then you say to me, where are you going? I said, I'm going back to Texas. And you say, I grew up in Texas. And all of a sudden we start a conversation. We have something in common. It changes the way you feel about me. That's the basic level of relevance. The highest level of relevance, though, which makes you really like somebody, is when they are the solution to your problem. I mean, if someone has got, you know, a spare tire and you are in the desert, that is a highly likable stranger, right? When you get the publisher's clearinghouse check for $20 million, you like it. Like you, you say. Relevance is the idea that you are what people need. Here's some advice. At the basic level, the first thing I want you to do is to develop a sincere interest in the people in your life. If you want to be a leader, you have to develop a sincere interest in the people that follow you. Here's something that you can actually go do in your life about this idea. It takes two pieces of paper. On the first piece of paper, you write down, my stash of hobbies. These are five hobbies or passions you have besides your job or your function in life. Now, for some of you, it's very difficult. You're very busy. You might not have a big, long list. You might have to go back and think about things you used to like to do when you were younger or always wanted to do, but come up with five. Now, on a separate piece of paper, I want you to write down my five frequent contacts. These are people you see all the time in your life, the five frequent ones. Do not include your family in this exercise. Now, for each one of those five frequent contacts, I challenge you to come up with two hobbies or passions that they have outside of work. Now, you may be a little short there, too. You may have to go back and ask. That conversation alone will improve your likability factor with that person. But when you have those 10 objects, two objects, five people, and you take the two lists and put it together, after doing this with over 3,500 people just like you, we found that you have a 75% chance of creating a direct match between one of your five passions and one of the passions of one of the five people you spend the most time in your life with besides your family. And it will supercharge that relationship and give you a common bond. I kid about Carnegie, but there is a saying he has, and I believe this: you will accomplish more in the next 2 months developing a sincere interest in two people than you will accomplish in the next 2 years trying to get two people interested in you. Here's my last piece of advice on relevance. I said at the highest level, you're part of the solution, not part of the problem. Here is my advice. Read books about what's changing in your world. People that are students, lifelong students of change, whether it's change in your industry, change in the family landscape, change. They are more comfortable, they are more intelligent, and they are frankly more interesting and likable than the average person. Readers are leaders. A study by the American Bookseller Association said the average business person in the world today reads approximately 0.7 professional books every 5 years. But we watch CNBC Squawk Box, we read magazines, we read online web pages, but we don't want to read books because they're hard and we don't have to. In contrast, the average Fortune 1000 executive reads over 6 books every year. Hear it first. Readers are leaders. Or as General Shinseki from the Joint Chiefs of Staff likes to say, if you hate change, you're going to hate irrelevance even more. Relevance does really take you to this next level, but what you've really got to do to break through and be a highly likable personality is to successfully learn how to show other people empathy. Researchers say that in a relationship, that's where the floodgates open. When a person thinks they've been heard, when they think that their feelings are facts in your eyes, the loyalty skyrockets and your likability peaks at an all-time high. And empathy, again, it has a low and a high level. At the lowest level, you're a good listener. You have the capacity to stop talking for a second. You know, it's interesting. The basic level, you can stop talking. But at the highest level, incredible empathy is when you have the capacity to communicate your sincere desire to see things from another person's point of view. I interviewed a lot of people about the power of empathy, and I'll never forget this one young man. It just sticks with me. He's talking to me. He can hardly choke up. He tells me, he says, you know, I carry around these feelings. And I carry him around like a bag of rocks, he says. And he goes, and I think that there's just nobody else in the whole world that knows what I'm going through. Empathy solves that pain. Let me give you some advice, though. And I think the advice is very, very simple. If you want to be more empathetic as a person, you have to learn how to be a deep and powerless listener. Because empathetic people are deep and powerless listeners. First, let me talk about deep listening. Deep listening is when you are with someone and you're not listening with your ears, you're listening with your eyes. You can walk out of that room and say, she's sad, she's surprised, she holds me in contempt, he's just angry, and know the difference. A deep listener dials into other people's emotions. A shallow listener spends their time with their head buried in a book, or they listen during a personal meeting and all they listen to are words and buzzwords and they get caught on semantics. You know the type. Here's the point. If you study deep listening for 2 hours, you'll double your effectiveness to use your eyes and not your ears and hear the emotions. Last piece of advice, be a powerless listener. A powerless listener, when exposed to raw emotions, they don't say, you shouldn't feel that way. A powerless listener doesn't say, give me the phone, I'll fix it. A powerless listener says, I'm sorry too. They don't say, shut up, shut up. That happened to me. I can empathize. Let me tell you about my life. That's called sympathy. That's not empathy. It makes the person feel worse. They want you to say, I'm sorry, and their feelings are legitimate. Here's the last thing I want to say. At the end of the day, you can do the first three things, but you got to be real. We live in a reality culture. Researchers say our greatest psychological need is to know what's real. Fantasy Island, Three's Company, that was the last generation's need, escapism. But in a post-9/11 information glut, James Fry-ridden world of I don't know what to believe, reality is not just a hot format for TV. It keeps everything fresh. Reality is the most important thing. At the base level, it's about telling the truth. But at the highest level, it's about finishing what you start in life, because that's what makes you genuine in the eyes of other people. Two pieces of advice in closing. First piece of advice, when you're with someone, be with them 100%. I've met a lot of people that say, I don't like Bill Clinton, but when I met him, he locked in on me, a nobody, like I was the only person on the planet. That is called presence. I advise you to go to your next important meeting gadget-free. No cell phone, no Blackberries, no interruptions. And I want you to learn how to lock in on people and give them 100% presence. It will change the quality of your relationships, and you won't miss anything important, by the way. Last piece of advice. If you want the title, you take the job that goes with it. You want to be a parent, then you raise your kids so there's no more raising to do. You want to be a manager, manage people. Don't hide behind your computer sending emails from 7 feet because you don't want to see and talk to people and have confrontation. If you're upset with someone, in the words of the great Marcus Buckingham, learn how to criticize the outcome, not the person, but finish what you start and be what your business card or your title in life says you are. And I've known this my entire life. If you finish what you start, no matter how people feel, they will come around and like you. Because remember this in closing, long after they forget what you did, long after they forget what you said, oh yeah, they're going to remember how you made them feel.
Success Audio Series, copyright Success Media, all rights reserved.